The Etheric or 4, the Interpretation of the Aeriforms, a Synopsis. The following paragraphs are intended as the shortest possible synopsis of the factors involved in this interpretation. The supporting data and reasoning are extensive and can be found in the various publications of the Borderland Research Associates. 1. The Aeriforms, flying discs, saucers, and mutants or indiscripts, are best understood with respect to their origin and nature as being emergents, that is, they emerge onto our plane of perception from a space-time frame of reference which is different from ours. This process may also be described as a conversion of energy and a change of vibratory rates. 2. That this is so, is obviously suggested by the phenomena themselves, since physical matter, as we know it, could not withstand the speed, temperature, and strain imposed by the observed operations of the discs and other forms. This does not conflict with the apparent composition of the landed discs. 3. When the energy conversion mentioned in 1, sup, takes place, the aeriform becomes visible and tangible. It appears to be and definitely is what we call solid substance, and so remains until the vibratory rate is again converted. The steel of the landed disc is an etheric steel and its copper is etheric copper, since the prototypes of all our metals exist in etheric matter. Nevertheless, chemical analysis has shown certain radical differences. The conversion process amounts to materialization and dematerialization. Dematerialization on our plane of perception would be materialization for any consciousness functioning on the etheric level, and vice versa. 4. Just as there is a spectrum of sound and of color, ending in sounds we cannot hear and colors we cannot see, so there is also a spectrum of tangibility, ending in forms of matter which are too dense to be touched. The ordinary matter of our plane is a rarefaction, and the interspaces between the nucleus and the electrons are relatively enormous. The extremely dense matter of the ethers passes through Earth's substance freely, and almost without friction. But if the vibratory rate of an etheric object is slowed down, it becomes less dense and enters our field of perception. 5. With reference to our use of the word density, this word is used in different senses by physicists and demands definition, for which we cannot here take space. 6. Etheric matter on account of its density is subject to the play of many subtle forces, including the energetic activity of thought. Any form or object of which the mind can conceive can be brought into existence by mental action, and controlled by the same means. Etheric objects are in every way as real as those of our own world. And there, 78, is abundant experimental evidence for the control of mind over matter on our own plane of perception. 7. The foregoing paragraph applies also to the bodies of Aetherian people. Our own bodies are truly made by our minds, we identify ourselves with them and control them. The Aetherian makes his own body in a somewhat similar way, but quickly and easily, and makes it in any size and form he chooses. By the same principle, he can produce the form of a sphere, a cylinder, a cube, a disc or saucer, and any desired vibrations of color and sound. 8. Whether the Aetherian people are human or not, depends entirely on one's definition of the word human. So far as we know, they are not excarnate humans and have not lived on our planet, though often visiting it. It is a cardinal mistake to assume that their bodies, and the other ships created by them are necessarily the same as we have seen them, when they withdraw to their own planes of existence. It is a cardinal mistake to assume that they are all of the same kind and race, or of the same moral character and evolutionary development. 9. The vehicle of an Aetherian, whether his body or his ship, is thus essentially a thought, form, as our own bodies are also, and a thought, form can be positioned anywhere. The problems of space travel as we conceive them, do not exist for him, as implied by paragraph, above. By altering his vibratory rates, the disc Aetherian penetrates our seas and the substance of our globe as easily as he does our atmosphere. All the air forms pass through each other, on occasion, and through our dwellings at will, and are, and probably always have been, invisibly present in varying numbers. 10. The Aetherians themselves, or entities purporting to be such, have given the following account, that the first step in constructing the huge spacecraft, motherships and other, is to isolate a cube of space, or ether, to the required vibration frequency. This etheric substance is then given the desired form, and the proper equipment is placed within it, according to its proposed station and operation. This work is done mainly by mental means. The Aetherians make use of machines and apparatus, but these also are etheric constructs. 11. When the ship is completed, it is placed by mental means, teleportation, in any desired location, as, say, in the vicinity of our Earth. So far, neither the ship nor any of these operations would be visible to us. But, if the frequency of the etheric matter is then converted to other specific rates, the ship will, or nay, become visible and tangible to our senses. But there is no crossing of space involved at any time, there is simply a change of location, and this is equivalent to a change of frequency or a conversion of vibratory rates. 12. This last principle cannot be reiterated too often. It is basic to any understanding of the whole mass of the aeriform phenomena. 13. These huge craft, to call them such, may be miles in dimension, or even of planetary size, hence the feasibility of an evacuation of the planet if necessary. Under what conditions these huge objects, hanging hundreds of miles overhead, are converted to a frequency rate perceptible to us, is, of course, unknown. But disks and other forms, discharged by motherships, are obviously so converted, in order to operate under gravitational and magnetic conditions peculiar to our planet. Or, it may be a part of the overall plan that these objects be made visible and tangible to us, as part of the education of the Earth people. 14. Recurring to the concept of emergence, it may be helpful to quote the following illustration. Suppose we have a series of concentric balls, one within another like the Chinese eggs. Call the central ball, number 1, and the others 2, 3, 4 etc. for any given point on, say, the 6th ball, there will be a corresponding spot on both the inside and the outside of ball number 5 and of ball number 7, and so on all the other balls also. Consider that each ball has its own vibration rate. Then if you wish to move any object on, say, ball 6 and place it on ball 5 or 7, you simply change its vibration rate accordingly. The object then will be located in a new place. It will not have to pass over any intervening space, it simply comes into existence in a new location. A change of frequency is equivalent to a change of location. 15. Such a statement as I am here means simply that I am tuned into objects, sounds and colors of my surroundings. If this receptivity were altered so that I tuned out, the environment would disappear, but would be replaced by a different one unless the change destroyed me. This would be a space, time operation and a change of location without transitive space. 16. Contemporary distrust of the concept of the other is unjustified and must be left to physicists who do not seem sufficiently familiar with the literature of their own subject. 17. So far, August 1955, the whole mass of material on aeriforms, with some tentative exceptions, has not produced an overall interpretation which is at once intelligible science and sound metaphysics. Yet the interpretation reported by us and here summarized is steadily gaining ground, and we bespeak its thoughtful consideration on its own merits. It will be expanded and altered in details, but it is basically correct. Excerpts from letter, Rolf Tellana to Medlane. Regarding the matter of forthcoming events, there is probably no reason why an advanced group such as the BSRA could not know the truth. In fact, it might be helpful if they did, since it would lead them to make any necessary mental preparations. First, I should like to make it clear that my people are not gods or any other sort of supernatural beings. They do live on a higher vibratory plane. They have advanced considerably above the people of this planet in both material and mental sciences. They do have a very long lifespan as compared to that of Earthlings, and so have time to acquire a considerable amount of knowledge in one incarnation. I like to think that, on the average, they have risen somewhat higher than the Earthlings in morals, ethics, and spiritual development. However, this is not invariably true on an individual basis, for some of them are evil. In brief, their mental processes and emotional reactions are quite human, and are, therefore, subject to all human error. Secondly, they disclaim any ability to truly foretell events in the usual and mystical sense of the word. What they do is to take as many facts as they can obtain, analyze them in the light of history and experience, and project them forward to discover what is the most probable sequence of events. They not only have very great mental abilities themselves, but can also tune into the cosmic mind for information, if desired. Thus the probability of their analysis is usually very high. There may be only one chance in a million that things will not be as they say, but there is still that chance, and it is therefore still only the most probable forecast, and not true prophecy. Keeping these limitations in mind, I can pass along the forecast that some great catastrophe is likely to take place very soon. They cannot say just how soon nor exactly how severe. Both of these depend upon several variables. However, it will be relatively soon, and relatively severe in loss of life and property. It will consist for the most part of a series of natural calamities, earthquakes, floods, etc. They will be, however, man, made in a basic sense. That is, both the atomic experiments and certain mental attitudes of the peoples are causing ethereal stresses which will have this result. The variable factors consist of what governments and peoples do in the future. If they should cease their release of atomic energy, and if the masses of the people should correct the pattern of their thinking, then these events would be delayed and made less severe. There is no evidence at present that either of these things will happen. The reason for not revealing these facts to the public at large is that, from a practical point of view, there is nothing they can do to, 81, avoid the end result. They apparently are doomed, but it would be cruel to tell them so. Very few would believe in any event, but those who did believe would die daily from then on. If they are allowed to remain in ignorance of their fate, they will go about their usual and ordinary occupations, and their passing will be relatively brief and with the minimum amount of terror. BSR associates, on the other hand, have more realization of the fact that the act of passing from this plane is not tragic or important in itself. The reasons and circumstances may be important, but not the act per se. It might be well for even B.S.R. associates to fix more firmly in their minds that life is a continuing thing. It cannot be destroyed, only transformed to some other plane. Thus one does not really lose his life. He merely loses his material body, and this is a relatively unimportant and transitory thing. What happens to it is important only in a few exceptional circumstances. What happens to the real person who is inhabiting that body at the moment is very important. There are often times when it is better to lose the mortal body, if the real immortal inner self would be degraded by the circumstances of retaining it. In the times of great stress which seem to lie ahead, it will often come to pass that a man must lose his life in order to gain his life. January 23, 1956 Fraternally, R.T. R.T. is an engineer by profession and a resident of the state of Ohio. The above was issued as personal bulletin number 6, to BSR Associates, February 1956. The idealistic point of view. One of the most profound and brilliant philosophers of modern times was George Berkeley, Bishop of Cloyne, 1685-1753. There is much in common between his metaphysics and the all-consciousness school of Oriental philosophy. The following exposition is selected from Weber. Just as color, smell, and taste exist only for the person perceiving them, so extension, form, and motion exist only in a mind that perceives them. Take away the perceiving subject and you take away the sensible world. Existence consists in perceiving or being perceived. That which is not perceived and does not perceive does not exist. Objects do not exist apart from the subjects perceiving them. There is no real difference between things and our ideas of them. The words sensible thing and idea are synonymous. Insofar as mind perceives ideas, things, it produces things. The ideas are things themselves. But since all objects do not depend on one's will for their being perceived, there must be some other will that produces them, God. Laws of nature are the set rules by which the great mind produces in us the ideas, objects, of sense. There is no material substratum of matter which supports the various qualities which our senses report to us, but there is a plurality of minds, and that which is not perceived by one mind may be maintained in existence by other minds or the great mind. Men assume the objective and independent existence of matter, because they feel that they are not the authors of their own sensations, and hence refer their origin to matter instead of to the creative mind, because the course of nature seems regular, yet the occurrence of a miracle often disturbs them in this contradictory notion. This, in my opinion, says Weber, is the only metaphysic that may be successfully opposed to materialism, overcomes the dualism of substances and satisfies the philosophic demand for unity. The control innately, being asked, how does a room look when nobody sees it? Replied in effect, the opposite of existence is latency. The unperceived object persists as an energy form, or as a potentiality in the sea of cosmic being. If one enters the room and sees its objects, his mind is evoking them according to the natural laws of its action. The thing, in itself, does not exist unless the words mean the energy which maintains and evokes the forms. Mind alone exists, and time, space, and causation cannot exist apart from mind. It is because of these facts that whenever science ventures upon a pronouncement on the final nature of anything, it becomes hopelessly involved with metaphysics. The separation of the two is a dichotomy, an artificial and temporary device in an effort to think an unintelligible world. What do you mean, space? Nothing is more desperately needed just now than a little attention to elementary semantics, simply to the definition of words. Let us explore very superficially the meaning of a single term, space, even at the risk of being deadly dull. Space in the philosophy of Aristotle means the container of all objects. If no objects, no container. In a void without objects, space could not exist. In a void with one object only, say, a single point, position would not exist. In Kantian metaphysics, space, like time and causation, is a form of mind action, or consciousness. Our minds are so made that we are aware of the world today only as it exists in space and time. In modern mathematics, space is a name for certain abstract groups or sets. It is not an objective entity. It is a concept, and as such is bound up with another idea, that of time. All objects exist in three dimensions, and also in time. This gives us the four-dimensional universe called the omniverse. Minkowski opened up this line of thought, and Einstein incorporated both the special and general theories of relativity. This space-time concept is based on the idea of geometrical points. A geometrical point has position only, does not have duration. If it is given duration, it will produce a geometrical line. Space, time is a term for the general structure of world events and objects, for 4D events. The omniverse cannot move or change, but we can think of change and motion, if space and time are regarded separately. No absolute separation is possible, but in a coordinate system we can think of them that way. Space, time is regarded somewhat differently by such thinkers as S. Alexander and C. L. Morgan, under the concept of emergent evolution. According to this, space, time is the universal matrix of matter, life, mind and even of deity. God is an emergent. On a somewhat mystic level, space is sometimes described as that form of reality which is not perceived by our senses. Mathematicians cannot get along without space, nor with it. They assign symbols and properties to it, but cannot treat it as an existent, nor recognize that it equates with the ether. The term empty space is meaningless, and so is the statement that the ether fills space. Russell's definition of an electron as a wave of probability with nothing to wave in shows the metaphysical poverty of such thinking, brilliant as its achievements may otherwise be. It seems certain that the ether will once again be accepted as the basic cosmic entity. As to whether or not the ether, or space, or ether, space, is material, depends on your definition of matter. Always ask for definitions. Always be sure you have one if you are asked. The Philosophy of the Communicators. Mediumship of Mark Probert. Philosophical comments by the communicators at Mark Probert seances are widely scattered through some hundreds of pages of memoranda and report, and we cannot here present the various questions asked, or the verbatim replies. The interest in this material, however, justifies one or two pages of clips and quotes in this issue, with brief continuing sections in several issues to come. For topics to be covered, see note at end of this article. The continuum, question: is there such a thing as a continuum in nature, any which is homogeneous, not particulate, or corresponding to the order of the ether? Answer: this is not a yes, or no question, it has what logicians call an excluded middle. It depends on what you mean by thing. There is no homogeneous substance or stuff, but there are various ethers of varying degrees of fineness, and of varying frequency rates. Remember that ether is a term for an existent in space. Now space as a projected idea, as some thing imagined to exist by itself, cannot be a continuum, because the mind cannot produce such a concept without falling into contradiction. But the consciousness which produces the space idea is itself a kind of continuum, because it lives in an eternal now and an eternal here. Anything existing in time and space has to be discrete, made up of parts, such as atoms of matter and instants of time and points of space. But consciousness does not exist in space and time. Space and time are in the consciousness, or other modes of its functioning. What we have, and are, is awareness in a timeless present, so to speak. I mean, consciousness is a timeless activity or pure activity. In this I am speaking of separate individual minds, or persons or individuals. We can trace all phenomena of the sense world back to the functioning of individual minds. Everything you know about an object, all of its qualities, reduces to states or activity of consciousness or awareness. But we are also aware that there is a plural number of minds. A is aware that B exists, and B is aware of A, and so on. A is creating his own space, time world, and B is creating his. Also, these two separate mind, created worlds have much in common, in the form of what you call the same experiences at the same time, very often. This last fact usually leads the philosopher to postulate something in addition to individual minds. A postulate is a necessary assumption. 85, he can't think the universe without this postulate, nor with it either, perhaps. If you try to think of the absolute, or God, as a first cause, you are thinking in terms of time and causation, and these are functions or forms of your own mind. And a first cause is something which has no cause itself, and this destroys the whole principle of causation or reasoning by which you are working. The reason always commits suicide when it looks for a first explanation or first cause, and yet it cannot get along without one. All the reason can do, really, is to operate in the field of manifestation, and neither to affirm nor deny the absolute of course. When you speak of emotions and instinct and religious faith, you are in another field of discourse. Going back to the form of your first question, remember that the world of your physical senses, of phenomena, of sense impressions, is a world which is projected by or perhaps through your individual minds. Your minds are so made that the external world, as you call it, is subject to time and space and causation. And so matter and energy also has to be discrete or particulate. And the mind finds in itself the laws which obtain in this mind, made world. It is the mind discovering itself. That is what science is. Nature is always nature, as, known, to, consciousness. There is nothing else to appeal to. You cannot say anything at all about nature, in itself, but only about nature as perceived by you. Intuition and instinct will give you certain experiences, but now we are talking about reason and logic and the world of sense perception. The thing, in itself. The question as to whether the thing, in itself exists is like the question about the continuum. It is not yes, or no question as it stands. Your mind is a centralized or focalized activity. It forms ideas and images, say, the image of a cube. That energy or power that takes the cube form might be called the cube, in itself. You don't need to say it is your own mind making the cube, but the cosmic energy or life is functioning through your center and making it. Of course, it is silly to talk as if there is some kind of material stuff put out there in space to make a cube. That is not philosophy but only childishness. Stuff and shape and distance and form are things created by mind, like time and space and causation. The cube, in itself is the creative force which produces the cube, form, and that force is of a mental order. All energy is of this same type in the last analysis. Other subjects discussed by the controls include change, the sub-conscious, responsibility, the high self, meditation and fear, and some of these will be summarized in another letter. Its publication here is somewhat experimental and we would like to hear the opinions of our readers. ML, from August 15, 1955. The Negative Proton. By C.F. Kraft. This recently discovered sub-atomic particle has about the same mass as the proton, but carries a negative electric charge instead of a positive charge, and is about twice the size of the proton. Under the prevailing doctrines of theoretical physics, such a particle cannot be accounted for. If its size is determined by its mass, as most physicists seem to think, then it should be of about the same size as the proton and not twice the size thereof. On the other hand, if it were a composite structure formed of one proton and two electrons, then its size would be over three times the size of the proton. Neither can it be a combination of a neutron and an electron because neutrons have no affinity for electrons. On page 36 of my book, The Ether and Its Vortices, published long before the negatron was discovered experimentally, I have shown two of these negatrons as constituent parts of the carbon atom, and it will be observed that my negatron does have a size just about twice the size of the proton. No doubt the physics profession will eventually find some explanation for the negatron, but the successful prediction of an unexpected fact is more convincing than any amount of wisdom after the fact. End. The foregoing memorandum from physicist C. F. Kraft gives indirect support to the ether vortex theory developed by him in his brochure The Ether and Its Vortices, 66 pgs, and should be of much interest not only to many BSR associates but to the entire physics profession. The brochure is obtainable from most university and public libraries, or in request from the author, at the nominal price of $1. Address C.F. Kraft, Route 2, Box 687. Annandale, Virginia. Reprinted from Mars 15, 1956. A memo from Nately, the spacecraft will not run on magnetic propulsion beyond the ionosphere. The ionosphere would destroy any magnetic sink between the craft and the Earth. Beyond that limit they operate on solar energy. There is almost no effect of the Earth's magnetic field beyond the ionosphere. The magnetic field will change according to the density of the nearest body. The craft will depend almost entirely on the solar energy. The colors noted about these craft are not due to temperature changes, but to electronic changes. No earth metal could stand such heat changes without becoming very brittle. It is the play of electrons produced by the solar radiation on the body of the craft and produces conditions similar to those that cause the aurora borealis, dictated by the Nately control. November 3, 1954. Concerning the Mark Probert mediumship. Mark Probert was born in Bayonne, New Jersey, in 1907, and attended the grammar school through the sixth grade. He went to sea in the Merchant Marine for 2 years, and afterward came to California, where he was a dancer and entertainer for a time, and held various odd jobs. He developed a talent for portrait painting, without any instruction, and still prefers that to any other occupation.